Wednesday, everyone, and welcome to tonight's program. We're so happy you guys are joining us. There's so much to unpack, and we've got quite the lineup, so you've got a lot in store for today. I wanted to go a little bit more into detail as to what took place yesterday at the Supreme Court, because it was a historic day. Many of you, I'm sure, are aware what took place, but it was regarding January 6th, and the Supreme Court heard opening arguments regarding 1512C, which is the obstruction charge, which so many J6ers by the hundreds have actually been slapped with. And this case is critical because it would save so many J6ers. And that's why it was incredible to see it and listen to it, I guess I should say, play out yesterday in the Supreme Court. Now, this is only making its way to the Supreme Court because of Joseph Fisher, whose attorney did argue in front of the Supreme Court justices. And well, I'll say I personally, in my opinion, did a mediocre job, I guess I'd say. But it was really impressive seeing the line of questioning that came out from the justices yesterday, because it kind of sounded a little clear that they were questioning why this law was being applied to this charge was being applied to these defendants. And ultimately, since it's so vague, why is the Biden administration specifically going after J6ers? Well, as many of you know, we on this show think it's politically motivated, of course. And, well, the Biden administration had to answer for that. And that was what's so important about all of this. Now, the corporate media, they couldn't even downplay it. Many of them had to admit that the DOJ has got an uphill battle with explaining this. And yesterday, the U.S., it was the Solicitor General, Elizabeth Pergolo. She was the woman who was arguing it. And, well, I think she did a mediocre job. It was quite confusing to follow her, mainly because the argument in itself as to why the DOJ was applying this charge to so many J6ers was pretty difficult to wrap your mind around. And I think a lot of the justices understood just that, and that's the reason why they were asking questions. Now, the only wild card I'd throw out there probably would be Justice Amy Coney Barrett, because ultimately she was asking questions, but she wasn't 100% on the side that I would hope she'd be on. So that's just my takeaway from everything. And obviously yesterday we gave you a little bit more depth. But don't listen to me, I'm not a lawyer. So let's bring in criminal defense attorney Ed Tarpley. Ed also represented Stuart Rhodes during the Oath Keepers trial. Ed, you were there front and center during all of this as this played out yesterday. What was your takeaway from everything?
Well, I was very pleased with the questions that the justices were asking. It seemed to me like there was a great deal of concern by them about what the Department of Justice has done in taking this law and using it the way they used it. Because if you will recall, the 1512 statute was passed as a part of the Sarbanes-Oxley bill in the wake of the Enron scandal. And it had to do with the spoliation of evidence, with tampering with evidence. And it was a very specific law because they were concerned about what had happened in the Enron case with evidence that had been tampered with. And so what happened here is the Department of Justice took a part of that law, 1512C2, and they applied it to the January 6th protesters. And they specifically focused on the subsection that dealt with impeding or obstructing an official proceeding. It's the statute, and let me just read the statute your listener real quick, because it's a little complicated to understand what this is all about. But it's the effect of the use of this statute has been devastating because it carries with it a 20-year sentence.
Yes,
the statute says 1512C2, whoever corruptly alters, destroys, mutilates, or conceals a record, document, or other object, or attempts to do so with the intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding, or two, otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. Well, that is a draconian statute. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is that the Department of Justice took this phrase otherwise obstructs, influences, and impedes any official proceeding, and they applied it to what happened on January 6th. And so over 350 people have been found guilty of 1512C2, and they have received jail time as a result of this. Now, you can get up to 20 years. No one's gotten up to 20 years. Maybe one of the Proud Boys got up to, I think, got 22 years, but over 20 years. But in our case, in the Rhodes case, Stuart Rhodes, I was part of the defense team for Stuart Rhodes. I mean, he received an 18-year sentence, okay? And this statute was one of the ones he was convicted of. So what the DOJ did is they took something and used it in a way that it had never been used before. And so the questions from the justice were fascinating. Justice Gorsuch, in my opinion, probably had some of the best questions because he wanted to know whether or not this same statute would apply to the protesters in San Francisco blocking a highway, or whether or not it would apply to someone pushing a fire alarm to delay a vote in Congress, or whether or not it would apply to someone that was, yelling about an issue and you know, going into Congress and disrupting a meeting or a speech or something like that. So, in any event, he asked these questions, and Elizabeth Prolegar, the Solicitor General, she simply couldn't answer them in a way that made any sense. And so I thought that Justice Gorsuch really pointed out the failure of the DOJ position, in that they have tried to use this statute, but guess what? They've only used it selectively because they have not used it against anybody else in any other way other than the way they did against the January 6th protesters.
Yeah, I think that's so important because it, I mean, and the justices were alluding to it, it shows a clear bias, and it's obviously politically motivated by the Biden administration. And I think, you know, you and I see it because we follow these cases. They have not prosecuted any of the BLM rioters as, I would say, as egregiously as they've gone after these J6 protesters. Ultimately, I mean, there was the one case, even in New York, that the DOJ ended up working out a plea agreement with two lawyers, people who graduated law school and are seen on video and on photo firebombing an NYPD vehicle moments after officers exited the car. And the DOJ negotiated a plea agreement for a year for both of those attorneys. And they were, yes, disbarred. But then we have people like your client who did not go into the Capitol that day, did not commit an act of violence that day, and was sentenced to 18 years in prison. So when you compare both of those, I think it's pretty obvious that there's a bias here with this Department of Justice. Now, I wanted to ask you specifically about Stuart Rhodes, because you were in the Supreme Court. Obviously, you were there, you were listening to what was going on. Specifically, why were you there that day to listen in?
Well, I was there yesterday because I had filed an amicus brief on behalf of the former Feds Group Freedom Foundation. I know you're familiar with Brad Geyer from New Jersey, and this is a group that is a 501c3 nonprofit group that was formed a few years ago to basically advocate for medical health freedom and bring to the front the issue, bring to the fore the issues that have plagued so many Americans, the people who died as a result of the hospital protocols and people who have died as a result of the vaccines, the vaccine mandates. All those issues are part of the things that the former Feds Group Freedom Foundation is concerned about. Now, our particular concern was this. We believe that the issue, that the statute is unconstitutional because we think it's vague and overbroad.
Yeah.
We think that it can be used to basically deny people their First Amendment right of the freedom to petition the government for a redress of grievances. In other words, who's to say that the government could take this statute, 1412C2, and use it against anyone who is trying to influence an official proceeding? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the words of the statute. So the way the statute is written, it's so broad, it's so vague, it's so unclear as to the meaning of the statute and how it could be applied, that we believe that it could be applied to peaceful protesters protesting for health freedom or any number of issues. So that's one of the things that we brought out in our brief. And I will say this, that Justice Amy Coney Barrett, at the end of the argument yesterday, she raised the issue of the violation of First Amendment freedoms and where the DOJ application of 1512C2 fit into that. And she asked the question, I mean, are we talking about chilling free speech here? Are we talking about a situation where people would be afraid to go out and demonstrate or protest and exercise their First Amendment rights because they're afraid that they may be prosecuted by the government for violating 1512C2? She asked that question. Well, the Solicitor General said, well, no, she didn't think so because, you know, there would have to be in a corrupt intent and other aspects to the prosecution that they would have to establish in order to bring a prosecution. In other words, she attempted to say that, no, that wouldn't fit, that, you know, that wouldn't qualify. Yeah. Okay. But guess what? We don't know that. We don't really know that. And so I really was pleased that Justice Amy Coney Barrett brought that issue out, and that is the violation of our First Amendment freedoms, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and the freedom to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And that's one of the issues that we brought out in our amicus brief for the former Feds Group Freedom Foundation.
Yeah, Ed, and I think it's interesting because mainly it looks like they're doing, I would say, a little bit of prosecutorial overreach here right now with the Department of Justice. But I also wanted to mention the fact that U.S. Attorney Matthew Graves, who's the one who's going after all these J6ers, he pretty much alluded to the fact that if the Supreme Court doesn't rule in favor of them, that they're going to, and anyone who has their sentences reduced, that they're going to go, and for the lesser charges that they got lesser sentences for, they're going to ask for a stiffer sentence there. Have you ever, as a criminal defense attorney, have you ever witnessed that before? And what do you think the Supreme Court will say about that? Because he said that before they've even given their ruling. Do you think that they might actually address that in their ruling?
Well, I don't know if they will or not. I know that that's a very harsh tactic to be used by the U.S. attorney, and it appears that that it shows a certain willingness to take advantage of the position that the defendants are in. I mean, you have to understand they already are convicted of certain statutes, and now the Supreme Court has ruled this statute unconstitutional, or they have reversed the conviction and said that this statute shouldn't have been applied this way. Well, now they would be entitled to be resentenced, and so the government is saying, "Well, tough, we're going to just come back and try to enhance your sentence by increasing the exposure to incarceration on one of the other charges that you've already been convicted on." And so it doesn't seem fair at all. And it just seems like it's one more indication that the Department of Justice has used 1512C2 and other statutes to crush those involved in the January 6th protest. In other words, it's a cruel and harsh application of the law. Look, we all believe in the rule of law, but, you know, justice should be tempered with mercy. And, you know, for the government to use these statutes for the sole purpose of trying to give a defendant more time when they already have received jail time is really, it's just not right. And it goes against everything we stand for as Americans, and it's a stain on the American system of justice. I will say this, that Justice Kavanaugh yesterday alluded to that. When he said to the Solicitor General, Ms. Prolegar, he said, look, this defendant, Mr. Fisher, he's charged with six other charges. He's got six other charges against him. was it really necessary to charge him with 1512C2? I mean, didn't you already have enough charges against him to deal with the conduct that he committed on the day of the offense? I mean, like, why are you piling on? I mean, why even use this statute against Mr. Fisher? He already had 6 charges against him. Prolegar, you know, attempted to answer the question and said, well, you know, the government believes that every conduct of any defendant should be addressed by the courts and you should be held accountable for what you did. And then Justice Kavanaugh came back and said, well, he said, is it no small moment that the other 6 charges are all misdemeanors and 1512C2 is a felony carrying a 20-year sentence? And you know, the effect was really pretty clear in the courtroom. Yeah, sure, we know why you're using this. It's all about stacking on and piling on additional time against these guys. That's what this is all about. There's nothing to do here with fairness. This is all about we're the government, and we're going to crush you for coming up here and protesting. Regardless of what you did, we're going to crush you, and we've got the statute to do it with, and we can put you away for a long time. And so, I mean, but Justice Kavanaugh brought that out, and I was surprised that he did, and I thought to myself, wow, that shows you right there that the justices really understand what's going on with the January 6th prosecutions and what the U.S. Attorney's Office and the District of Columbia has done.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's refreshing to hear that, because just from the outside looking in, it's just as just a regular citizen watching what's going on, it's disgusting, it's un-American, and it's disturbing to see the DOJ getting away with it. So I was excited to see the Supreme Court take on this case, and I'm pretty sure there's plenty of others they're going to be willing to take on as well. So it's going to be interesting to see their decision come down as well. Do you expect, normally the timeline is probably June, July for that decision to come down?
It'll be done by the end of June. Let me just say this. I feel like there are 6 solid votes in favor of reversing the convictions. Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Clarence Thomas, Justice Alito, Samuel Alito, all had great questions. And then Gorsuch, his questions were just devastating. I mean, you know, if you get a chance to go back and read the transcript, because he's just devastating on what he did, because he pointed out the instances where the government could have used their application of 1512C2, and they have not, but yet they used it against the January 6th defendants. And I think that statement about the guy pulling the fire alarm to delay a vote in Congress.
Yeah, the congressman, yeah.
Congressman Bowman. I mean, that was really great. And so you got Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, and I believe Amy Coney Barrett is going to be there too. Now, actually, let me just say this: right at the end of the proceeding, Justice Ketanji Jackson actually asked a couple of really good questions that were very favorable to Fisher. So anyway, so who knows? It could be a 7-2, and so that would be amazing. So look, well, let's just see what happens. But look, I felt really good about it. I just want to encourage people to keep praying. Look, we were praying in the courtroom yesterday, praying for the justices, praying for the lawyers. I just want to ask all your listeners, look, pray for the Supreme Court justices. There's a lot of weight on their shoulders. This is such an important case, and it will have enormous effects all throughout the January 6th prosecutions. And it will be a major rebuke to the Department of Justice. There's no question about it. It would be a major rebuke to them, saying, y'all were out of line, what you did was wrong, and we are reversing you right now. So that's what I think is going to happen.
Well, that's what we're hoping goes down. I mean, I honestly, I'm very hopeful of this, but I don't want to mislead the audience in getting their hopes up too high. But the DOJ has just overdone it here, and it's so obvious. I couldn't imagine anyone else arguing against just that, Ed. They will, but ultimately it's because they're politically biased. Anyone who's looking at this as just from a neutral standpoint and who understands how the law in this country works and how it's applied understands just that. So we'll see how it plays out.
Well, let me just finish by saying this. Yesterday, it seemed to me that the Solicitor General was having a tough time answering the questions. If you listen to any of the oral argument, she was speaking very rapidly. Yeah. She seemed confused. She just did not seem to be on solid footing in answering the questions. And she made several important concessions to the justices about issues in the case. So, look, I think that Mr. Fisher's lawyer, Mr. Green, did a really good job. But let me tell you what, the justices themselves exhibited their concern about the way the Department of Justice has applied this law. So that, to me, spoke volumes. And look, body language is important. And you could see on their faces, you could see as they moved and as they spoke, and the concern that the justices had about this case. And I mean, look, it meant everything to be there in the courtroom because, you know, we filed an amicus brief, but to just see the justices in person asking their questions and making their statements, it was powerful. And I'm very, very hopeful.
Yes, I am too. Thank you, Ed Tarpley. We greatly appreciate your time. We'll have you back on when we get their decision. So thank you, Ed. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed that interview, make sure you hit that subscribe button right now. And if you're watching on Rumble or YouTube or listening on any of the podcasting platforms like Spotify or iTunes, make sure you give us a thumbs up or a 5-star review. You could do so for every single episode, and we greatly appreciate it, of course. And if you're looking to support our independent program, you can head over to supportbree.com. That's supportbree.com. That's where you can either place a one-time donation or a monthly donation. You can pick the dollar amount. It's completely up to you guys, of course. And we greatly appreciate, like I mentioned, because, well, I'm an independent journalist and the people that help this show are also working independently as well. So everything you give goes directly to us. That is the best way to support us. So head over to supportbree.com right now. We'll be right back after this. I want to let our audience in on a little secret. I'm saving hundreds of dollars each year after switching over both of my lines to Patriot Mobile. Yes, so now my business and personal line are with Patriot Mobile. Now, Patriot Mobile uses the same towers that you're probably already using now, except it's less expensive. So my 5G towers that I love to use my old provider, I'm still using them now. I'm just paying significantly less money to do so. And on top of it all, Patriot Mobile believes in the same things you and I believe in. They have the same morals. So they donate to causes that are like pro-life causes, veteran causes, and even the NRA. It's incredible. So I highly recommend you head over to patriotmobile.com right now, take a look at their plans, and sign up. And today, if you sign up and use promo code Brianna, they're going to waive the activation fee. Yes, you heard it right. They're going to waive the activation fee. Just make sure you use promo code Brianna, B-R-E-A-N-N-A.